All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, May 23rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
May 23rd, James Davis. They call me May 23rd, James Davis, dude. This is my lucky day.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. All right, DFSR.com is a site, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. If you like typing in more letters on the old keyboard, DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB. NBA, while we still roll through some of these two-game slates, playoff getting extended a little bit with the Rockets beating the Warriors last night.
So, how about it?
We're headed to seven no matter what, which is really cool. Anyway, that's NBA, but we still have optimal lineups up for there too. Free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after, and you're all good to go. Today's Wednesday. I'm already off by a day. Wednesday baseball, we actually have a double slate today. Some 1 o'clock Eastern games going on. FanDuel does not include the 4 o'clock game. DraftKings does. So we'll just include we'll include up to the 4 o'clock game as part of the early slate as we're breaking down some of these games. And then we have an evening run of games that look pretty decent. I'm actually glad because when I was writing up the picks last night, it's always a little easier when we on these double slates where you can stagger some of the aces that they just we get. The scheduling gods were shine nicely in our favor by staggering Verlander and DeGrom. So I guess we'll start there. On the early slate of games, I mean, is there any reason at all to fade Verlander here? There's such a massive, at least for our system, such a massive drop off from him to really even the next closest guy. Like on FanDuel, we have Verlander. I'm just looking at it real quick. We have Verlander at 46.5 points. And then you have to do a 16-point downgrade to the next closest guy. When you see this kind of spread, one, does it incentivize you to play the slate more for everyone that doesn't play Verlander in cash? Because we've definitely talked about this idea before. And then two, is there any reason at all to pivot off of him? Or like, what do you think his ownership is going to be?
Yeah, I don't think there's any interesting discussion as to whether you should play him or not. I just think it's like so plainly obvious. The guy's been an ace's ace this season. And, you know, he's just running away the only safe pitcher on the slate, I would say, when you're looking for that really top-end talent. One thing that's interesting for me about Verlander, though, and this is something, you know, it's kind of shines a light on why DFS baseball can be kind of tricky and projecting baseball players can be hard, too. If you go through Verlander's last, like, 5 years, and you compare his ERA to his xFIP, because oftentimes we talk about, you know, a guy's xFIP being lower than his ERA as an indication that he's been lucky. So Verlander this season, he's obviously been somewhat lucky. Like the one ERA, he's not Bob Gibson in his prime pitching against minor leaguers. Like he's not going to sustain a one ERA over the course of the whole season. But the 3.46 xFIP doesn't paint the picture of a guy who's just completely dominating hitters, right? I mean, 11 Ks per nine, 1.8 walks per nine, half a home run per nine. That doesn't sound like a guy who should be giving up 3.5 runs every 9 innings, right? Like that just sounds wrong to me. So I was going back and just looking through his prior years. Last year, he was 0.8 runs better than his xFIP. His ERA was 0.8 runs better than his xFIP the year before that. 2014, he actually had an ERA higher than his xFIP. And then in the 4 years prior to that, same story, ERA significantly ahead of his xFIP, as much as 0.72 in his 2011 campaign where he won 24 games. So this guy, for whatever reason, the xFIP model doesn't really apply to him. And I think by and large, he just depresses home run to fly ball rate in a way that you just don't see in most pitchers. Like, you know, he's got 4.6% home run to fly ball rate, which is particularly significant for a guy that does give up a lot of fly balls. The 29.4% ground ball percentage, if he sustains that over the course of the whole season, will probably be like among the very lowest, if not the lowest, among all qualified pitchers. So this is more just an interesting case study in Verlander for future slates that he's on. I actually tend to trust that he'll just, you know, he's just probably some weird thing that he does that's a little unique that other pitchers can't replicate for whatever reason, or maybe he doesn't even know what it is. But I do trust that he will be better than the xFIP over the course of the season. Probably like a true talent 2.5 ERA guy by my estimation right now, and that's a damn good pitcher for these prices. And I mean, 6.8 innings per start too. He's just really getting it coming and going right now. Great pitcher, great spot. Crazy to play anyone else for cash, I think.
I agree with almost all that. The only thing I would, so I agree with you. So he at 2,600 innings, he's at almost a half a run lower on the ERA than xFIP. So definitely there's for sure something to that where it's just something's right. Happening for him. So I'm with you on there. I'm with you on almost every point. The only thing I would caution going forward, and this really doesn't play, this is not a part of it today because for all the reasons that he's just the best pitcher on the slate, is that he's probably going to be priced like the Chris Sales, and I'm going to include Garrett Cole, but maybe that's wrong, the Scherzers of the world. And I would definitely rank all of those guys above him because I do think that he's getting a price hike There has been a lot of luck in his thing. Like, again, he's better. I would agree with you in the ERA part. He's like at a 91% left on base percentage, a 200 BABIP. Sure. Like those numbers are way off his career averages.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I gave you in a run and a half back on the ERA. What else do you want, man?
I'm just saying. Oh no, I'm with you. I'm just saying that when if we find ourselves on a slate where these guys, where he's paired, where he's like maybe. Honestly, with those other guys, those very, very top tier guys that he's going to be, in the 13,000s on DraftKings, and he might end up. This is a good matchup too, so there's reason to suspect like the price just continues to climb. I would caution that I probably don't see him in the same light as some of those other guys, and still think he's an ace today. So it's probably only really splitting hairs at this point. After him, we have some starting pitcher too. Question marks. I think I'm going to, this is good where I'm going to include the Washington game because there's a guy I want to bring up here, but I have a question about. Either pivots or, if we're just going to fade Verlander, because if you think the ownership is going to be 70, 80%, maybe even GBP, which it might be, there's possibly reason to, probably not that high, but there's reason to maybe think about going another way. Look at Kyle Gibson's numbers this year. Kyle Gibson's a guy that in the past, from DFS purposes, we were fine to just kind of stack against. This is a guy that had really had a lot of K struggles, had an XFIP in like the mid fours. He was always like his ERA and stuff were always a little bit better because he induced so many ground balls. Now he's striking out 10 guys per nine. This is a small sample size, so it's only 50 innings. The walks are high. I mean, what do we make of a guy like Gibson who it looks like he maybe has made some kind of maybe some shifts in his approach, and the price maybe hasn't caught up to the K's, but I'm wondering if that's an outlier, and also like if the walks are such a problem that we really can't, like maybe he's still a bad, not that great of a pitcher, but just not as good in a different way than he used to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't trust the K gains because they're coming with such a dramatic hike in the walks. Like, so if you were coming in, we know that these teams scout the opposing pitcher extensively, right? So prior to this, Gibson was striking out basically no one. I mean, sub 7 Ks per 9 is definitely not where you want to be. I mean, he's been in the fives at other points in his career. He's just not been a strikeout pitcher. So one of the ways you can get more swings and misses is just to be wild in counts where batters expect you to be conservative. You know what I mean? So like if it's a 3-1 count and he just throws the ball as hard as he can up in the zone or something, and you're like, whoa, I didn't know Gibby had it in him. I thought he was going to try and play around the plate. So he's getting more walks, but he's also getting more strikeouts. Now, the issue is that, I mean, strikeouts are great. Striking a batter out is, I mean, you don't get more outs for it, but generally speaking, when you strike a batter out, you give him no chance to get on base. And when the ball comes in play, he has like a 28 or 30% chance to get on base, right? So strikeouts are definitely better from a pitcher's perspective than allowing the batter to put the ball in play. But walking the guy is like the extreme polar opposite, right? Like if you put a guy on first base, now he has 100% chance to be on first base versus if he puts the ball in play where, again, he only has like a 30% chance to get on base. So when you trade walks for strikeouts, for DFS purposes, that can kind of work out because you get points for strikeouts. They do count better than regular outs for whatever reason. Mostly probably just makes the game more fun. But for being an actual good pitcher purposes, the XFIP this season is only 0.3 lower than it was last year. He also is running very well on BABIP as compared to his career numbers. I don't really buy any huge improvements. The guy's 30 years old as well. So like, I don't know. I'm not getting too excited about Gibson. For GPP purposes, on a small slate like this, where there's a lot of pitchers without upside, sure. Like, why not? I mean, he can certainly have a good game. He's more likely to have a good game than some of these other guys. But I don't know. The total package is pretty uninspiring to me.
Yeah, there's a couple things about his approach. He's throwing the fastball a lot more, like 5 or 6% more than his career best or career most up until this point. So there's been it seems like more of a, again, it's only 50 innings. These things change. There has been a different approach. He's throwing the fastball actually harder, about a half mile an hour harder than he had been at any other point in his career. So there's reason to believe that the approach is different. And he's just, like you said, has sacrificed the walks for the strikeouts, it seems like, up until this point. And we'll see. Now, he gets a good matchup against Detroit, who's just not a very good team. He's a minus 170 favorite. So I guess my question would be, the other pitcher on the slate with an 8 over-under, minus 170 favorite, is Michael Wacha. They're both basically the same price. On DraftKings, at least, they're like $200 or $300 difference. $500 difference. Wacha's he's $500 more on FanDuel. Wacha's significantly more expensive, $1,600 more on DraftKings. How would you compare these two? Let's say we're looking at these two guys, the starting pitcher, two sort of types. Is there one that you would favor over the other, or am I just like missing a guy in the slate that I probably should be focusing on other than these guys?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, as far as Vegas is concerned, Waka and Gibson are essentially a push in terms of overall runs allowed today. It's actually remarkably close. Both games have an 8 total. Cards are now favored minus 166. The Twins are favored minus 160. So they're both almost exactly as likely to get a win and giving up roughly the same number of runs. So on the surface, that I think that would favor Gibson just because the strikeouts, at least for this season, have been a little bit higher. But I think if you're going for safety purposes, just Waka's track record. I mean, last year, 8.6 Ks per nine, 3 walks per nine. That's a pretty decent pitcher. And, you know, he was a half a run better than Gibson in terms of xFIP last season as well. So, yeah, I think I'd lean Waka for safety purposes. I think you could go Gibson for upside. It's always the coward's hedge in DFS to give one guy for cash and one guy for big tournaments, because then you don't really have to make any grand declarations either way. But I actually do think that's my honest opinion. I also think for Waka, helps pitching in an NL park, getting that extra, you know, a couple plate appearances against a pitcher just seems to be enough of a tiebreaker that cash or Waka seems like a better fit for cash for me.
Yeah, you also have Godley going here. Godley does have some strikeout stuff. He's not a big of a favorite, and the Brewers are projected for more overall runs than either of the teams that we mentioned above. So there are some decent arms going on this slate. And the other guy I wanted to mention out here is Eric. I'm going to pronounce this Fede, but it could be just Fed, F-E-D-D-E. He's a rookie for the Nationals that's going to come up and make the start. He is something of a prospect. The numbers, the minor league numbers were pretty good, about a strikeout per nine guy. And like I said, he is not just a bum hunting guy that they're just bringing up. This guy has been in some, you know, top 100 prospect lists and whatnot. When we see a guy like this making his first start of his career, he's got a great matchup against San Diego, and he does have what appears to be at least some pedigree. Are these situations, now there's no line in the game right now, so I'm not exactly sure where Vegas is coming in on it. You have to assume Washington's going to be the favorite on the offense alone, but just being at home. Where do you land with a guy like this in his first start? Are you willing to take a risk? He's only 6,000 on DraftKings, which seems really advantageous if you think he's just going to at least go 5 innings and be something of an arm.
Yeah, I mean, so it's his first start for this season, but we did get 3 starts out of him last year, and he was bad. I mean, he was actually super, super bad. Allowed like something like 16 runs and 15 in a third innings pitch. Yeah, he was pretty good in the minors again this year. He had been pretty good in the minors before that. You know, he's 25, so he's not super, super young, but the control was really rough on him last year in the majors. I think when I have those 3 starts, even though they weren't this year, and even though he looked better in AAA this year, a lot of guys look good in AAA before coming up and getting their butts handed to them. He's more of a guy, actually, I would want to target bats against him rather than stack, use him as like my pitcher 2 on DraftKings. I just think his upside is being Michael Waka, or maybe that's not his extreme 4 standard deviations upside, but like, In a great situation, the Nationals are thrilled if he becomes an 8.5 Ks per nine, 3 walks per nine guy, because that would be like almost exactly what he was in AAA this year. And so for that, yeah, he's cheaper, so there's no question about that. Great matchup with San Diego, so that's a feather in his cap, I suppose. Maybe a reason to maybe dabble with him in a big tournament, but I don't know. It's really, really speculative either way.
Just real quick, let's just touch on an offense or two that we can stack maybe in cash games. Is there one that stands out to you before we hit some of these later slate games up?
Yeah, I think there's a couple, actually. I'm not sure if you can wind up getting there, but stacking against Jeff Samardzija, you know, so playing the Astros against Jeff Samardzija seems like a pretty reasonable spot to me. We've been waiting for Samardzija to turn it around. It has not come, man. Like, the he basically went right back to his 2016 and prior kind of issues that he was having for those couple of years, where
except he's walking more guys
away. He's walking right. If you add up all those seasons combined, that's how many guys he's walking right now. So 5.4 walks per nine without the strikeouts. He's given up home runs. The guy seems totally broken to me. 5.85 xFIP. It's only 6 starts, I suppose. So, you know, technically speaking, there's time. But man, in his age 33 season, for a guy that's always been sort of erratic, I just don't see it, man. I think stacking Astros today, it's expensive. You know, it's always going to be expensive when you want to play more than one Astro on a team, but he's the standout bad pitcher on the early slate to me.
If I had to choose one, I would go Correa, only because of the positional scarcity, just getting those shortstops. Yeah, it's just so hard. It's so hard to roster shortstops just on a day-to-day basis. There's really only 4 or 5 fantasy viable shortstops, especially on FanDuel. And right. DraftKings, you get a little easier because of the multi-position eligibility, but on FanDuel, on a daily basis, it's like Turner, Correa, Semien, I'm sure Didi, and like, I don't know, one other guy that I'm sure I'm forgetting, but there's the options at shortstop are just so thin. So I think if I was going to pay up for any guy, it would be Correa. Now the prices have come down somewhat on most of the Astros, so I think we're probably in a good spot. I right now the system's favoring stacking Cardinals. That's another team who've seen their prices really drop. I mean, Ozuna is way down in the basement in terms of price. He had a good game last night and was highly owned, so I suspect he's going to be up there again. All of his problems have been basically luck related problems. So you're not that his price is depressed strictly on luck. And then just guys like Pham, Carpenter, all of them are coming in a really nice price tier, even on FanDuel, where if you're considering you're going to pay up for Verlander. One guy I want to throw in there as a one-off is Paul Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt has been awful against righties this year, but he's still been awesome against lefties. So like his overall numbers look pretty bad for him because he just hasn't faced.
You're going to face more righties than lefties, and he's doing terribly against
them. And he's faced even less lefties like than he probably should have been up to this point in the season, just because of whatever the scheduling. So people are going to see his $3,600 price tag and also look at some of his season numbers and think, you know, why would I want to play this guy? Because he's just maybe his on a downward turn, and he probably is. But this is still a spot to buy. He's 100% play for me. I'm not as enamored with the rest of the Diamondbacks, but he's in a spot where his problems are not lefty related. All right, hit us up with a sponsor, then we'll talk about some of these evening games.
Sure, we'll talk about FantasyFactor.com. It's a great place to go and play the salary cap game format games like you're used to, but without all the sharks putting in hundreds of lineups in every single lineup. I mean, there's no doubt about it that DFS baseball in particular is getting harder and harder every single day. So you tune into us for the information, and then I think you head over to FantasyFactor.com, especially if you're someone who's only going to play between, say, $5 and $100 per slate. I think it's just a much better place to invest your money while you're getting your feet wet, while you're learning the game, and so on and so forth. So yeah, check them out, FantasyFactor.com. Right now they're running their progressive home run derby contest, and yeah, just good guys all around. They've been with us for quite a long time, and we've never heard any complaints back from any of our users that have gone over there. So check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
All right, the evening slate of games here is interesting. Well, I'm just going to start off talking about DeGrom, because DeGrom, at least on FanDuel, is just completely mispriced. So I'm just going to get that out of the way to start. He is at 10-4, and that price just makes no sense to me. I don't know if it was like screwed up in the algorithm because he had two.
It was, yeah. It was because of that one inning start, and he was like 9,800 when we played him the last time around, and he was four innings to start before that, and for whatever reason, his price just went down, and there's no one behind him.
Yeah, like there. So, it's yeah, weird about their pricing, like because like they in a lot of ways they got better about this in like NBA, but the baseball pricing is still just completely so wonky, and the fact that he's 10-4, it's just a total mistake. And like you said, the price is down because that four inning game, that wasn't even a pitcher related thing. He got beaned, or he got hurt on a hit that he had. So he got hit, and then he just came back the next game. The rain delay, whatever. His innings per start, when you take those two starts out, are like way over six innings per start. He's been putting up elite numbers. So he's an easy play there. Now the DraftKings gets it right though, because DraftKings has him at 13-2, and now we're in a question mark territory, because 13,000 is really, I mean, north of 13,000 is high, is really as high as you almost see any pitcher. Like this is higher than Sale last night, I think. Like I think he and Cole were in the low 13,000s. They have it seemed to be set where it gets your price and also compares you against the other pitchers on the slate, is my guess. Like I'm not sure if that's worked into the algorithm at all. So at 13,000, it takes a little bit of finagling to get that price in there. Do you think it's still worth it? When you're talking this price, you're talking clearly the best arm, and you're not only that, but you're talking you need to put up basically elite level numbers. Is the matchup and what he's shown to you this season enough to warrant probably taking a hit somewhere else in your lineup?
Yeah, I think it's doable. I think you can play him alongside, say, Chris Archer. I mean, Archer's 6,700. Understanding that he's an underdog facing Boston, it's a bad spot, right? But getting a guy like Archer at 6,700, I think, you know, eases the pain of paying up for DeGrom a little bit. I mean, the other thing here is that there's just no good pitchers on this late slate besides DeGrom. Like, and that's really, I'm ready to listen that price is too high for sure, but I just want to know who you're going to play instead of him, because you still have to play somebody, right? So, like, do you want David Price against the Rays at 8,800? I mean, I don't know. I think I would just take the other side and Archer and what effectively amounts to a pick'em in what is also just a pretty good ballpark. Who else is even out there? I mean, Sabathia is kind of a big favorite. That game has a huge total. You keep going down the line. I'm scrolling past DeGrom, John Lester, maybe. I mean, like, what do you even want to do
here? I wrote up Maeda. I do think he's in a good spot here. His numbers have been excellent. He's expensive, so he's pushing up to 10,000. But some of the concerns on Maeda, at least to start the season, were pitch counts. That really hasn't been as big of an issue lately. He's gone, I wrote him up last night, he's gone like 96 or more pitches in four of his last five starts. So I think you're in a good spot with him there. His K numbers are way up this season. It's only 44 innings, but he's striking out 11 per nine. The walks are right in line with what he's done. Low threes, xFIP. And then Colorado is just pretty bad. I mean, now Colorado, their numbers are a little weird.
Best team in the West, dude.
Well, yeah, well, I was looking at this before, but they have a negative they have a negative run differential, and they're in first place in the West. They have now they are bottom of the near bottom of the barrel against righties. They've played a lot of games on the road, and their road games are going to be in places like San Diego, L.A. I mean, Arizona doesn't really count as much, but they, San Francisco. So they have to play in a lot of bad ballparks, and these numbers are non-home road split adjusted. So it probably looks a little worse for them, and they're still just not a very good offense. They strike out a ton. At 9,800, though, see, the thing, the hard part is, at 9,800, and you're, that's paying a premium on Maeda, I think, and the 13-2 is a premium premium on DeGrom. And now, if all of a sudden, if you're going to pay a premium on both, I mean, is it still worth it? I hear you on Archer. I'm worried about that he's just playing like the best, one of the best offenses in baseball in Boston, and I get that he has some other things going in his favor. But, I mean, could he be talked into Maeda? He's knowing that he's significantly more expensive than the other guys you mentioned.
That can be talked into Maeda. I think Maeda's a fine play here. I do think you're really with Maeda, you're just trying to figure out what the innings, the average expected innings are for him. Because, yeah, he went 8 last game, but he has struggled to get more than 5 innings at times, whether it's a pitch count thing or something else, or, you know, total innings thing, or the Dodgers will pull you after one long inning. There's just a lot of risk in playing Dodgers pitchers generally, yes, in my mind, outside of Clayton Kershaw. So, yeah, totally playable. I mean, the money line isn't as strong as DeGrom, but again, you're getting a significant savings. I think on a night where you're going to have to make some concessions, he seems like a fine way to go.
Other guys to maybe consider, like you mentioned, David Price is a slight favorite here, and minus 130 in a good ballpark against Tampa Bay, who's been kind of piecemealing together lineups. They've had some injury issues. They threw out a pretty sloppy looking lineup against Sale last night, although they were able to get to him a little bit. Sale got lucky early in the game and then kind of just settled in for his usual just star performance. But I mean, Price, though, he's another one. Hey, we're looking at career low in strikeouts, career high in walks. Have we basically seen the end? Is the David Price, are we way off the peak on Price now, 32 season? Should we project like nothing but decline from here on out? Because I feel like I've been trending his numbers lower and lower with every start that he makes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think you can pretty safely project him to be worse than he's been in the past. I don't think there's really any question about that. Still, he's got Michael Wacha's peripherals, basically, and I don't think that's a terrible place to be for your pitcher two slot. He's not very expensive. It's not an exceptional matchup with the Rays, but it's not a terrible matchup with the Rays. Yeah, I think it's just kind of is what it is. It's an unexciting pitcher two play where on a site where unexciting pitcher two plays are the norm. I mean, especially on what amounts to only 2/3 of a slate, considering we have an early slate too. So, you know, you're not going to hear me be very excited about any of these plays, but again, you just have to press the plus sign next to two guys' names. So
right.
That's really where you're going to get bit. I mean, right now we have no line on the Cubs game. Lester, the ERA, has been there this season. You know, there's other things I think we can consider, but I think by and large, it's going to just be a day where we just are going to get questions in the chat. I'm looking forward to this tonight, being me and Chris peeking in on the chat tonight. We're just going to have people in there complaining and saying, why this guy? And then we'll say, well, who else did you want to play? And then they won't have any good answers, or they'll throw out someone who stinks, and we'll have to teach them about why that guy stinks because John Lester's not good anymore or whatever. And that's just going to be how tonight goes, buddy. They call me James Tradamus because I'm predicting the future.
I'm interested to see what the Seattle-Oakland line comes in at, because there's no line in the game right now. I don't know if we're waiting for like an Oakland starting pitcher, but I think it was Gossett, so I'm not exactly sure why there's no line here. Marco Gonzalez has been interesting this year. 8.5 Ks per nine, less than 2 walks, nice xFIP. The ERA is a run and a half higher than the xFIP, so we might be buying a little bit on the low side with him. A's do have some bats in the middle of the order specifically that will strike out. It looks like the wind's blowing out in Oakland, but that's a great place to pitch. So that's actually, he's like the one guy where I'm going to be interested to see where the Vegas line comes in. Because if it comes in as him as a road favorite, which would be, I mean, even at like a minus 20 favorite with an 8 over-under or something like that, I would be at 6,100. I could be talked into his peripherals at least, because his peripherals kind of look in the same line as Archer and Price, and he's just significantly cheaper. So again, with a smaller sample size, that's gonna be the one play where I'm waiting on to see what Vegas's opinion on, because I can see Vegas's opinion there swinging me just a little bit, and I think I'm just gonna make every possible way to get DeGrom. If 13,000, so be it. Come hell or high water, I think I'm interested in just getting that DeGrom price in there. One of the reasons to maybe spend down, though, at pitching is that some of these offenses are in great spots tonight. Is there one or two offenses that you're looking at that might be worth paying up for. Yankees in a good spot. Not so much Boston. There are some teams that seem like they might be worth paying for. What's standing out to you here?
Yeah, I think there's actually a decent amount of bad pitching that you can target against tonight. We've mentioned some of it in terms of guys we were considering for our pitcher too, so that's us living large right now. But I think one game you can probably target either sides of is the Orioles-White Sox game. Alex Cobb's a guy that we've given you the dirty on several times this season. The guy's just not the ace or even remote pitcher three type guy that people projected he would be coming up. So, the White Sox, generally an uninspiring offense, but, you can pick and choose guys towards the top of the order, maybe get a one-off. And if there's someone that's going to blow up on this slate and just have a terrible start, Cobb certainly has to be in that discussion. And then going the other way, a guy we targeted a ton last season has one start so far this year, but it doesn't appear that anything's really improved, is Dylan Govey. Getting the Orioles against him, this guy last year was among the very worst in all of the majors. He managed to pitch 70 innings in the major leagues, Doug, with a 7.7 ERA that admittedly was two runs better than his 5.5 xFIP, but still nothing to write home about at all. Striking out just 5.2 per nine, walking 4.4 per nine. Had almost those exact same peripherals in his first start this year, where he went six innings, but managed to have the 6 ERA once again. So yeah, I think both sides of that game totally stack worthy right now.
Yeah, one of the reasons on DraftKings, at least, it is tough to get a guy like DeGrom in, at least for our system's purposes, is so many of these big, very expensive bats are in great spots, like Machado, yeah, and the Orioles. Although some of the other Orioles, like Mancini,
the
and
Yankees
Jones,
too.
Oh, the Yankees, and the other Yankees against Fister, they're projected for somewhere up north of six runs right now. So when you're looking at paying very top dollar for guys like Judge and Stanton. Sanchez in there now, but he left the game early last night, but I think it was just cramped, so I'm not exactly sure if he's going to play or not. That could actually shuffle around the order a little bit, which is nice. It's nice when he doesn't play because it moves someone else up the lineup, like whether it be Walker, Andujar, someone like that up the Yankees lineup. That's always a good spot to buy. I wrote up Brett Gardner. He's probably the one guy that I'd be fine just playing in cash specifically on FanDuel. It was only 3,100 hitting leadoff for a team that is projected to put up the most runs. He'll probably be one of the most highly owned guys on the slate, I would suspect. And his power numbers are down this year, but he's running, presumably, it looks like very bad on home run to fly ball ratio. So even if you're going to take one guy on FanDuel because you couldn't fit everybody, I don't mind Gardner. I like both sides of the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game too. 10 over-under right now. It looks like the runs are coming in pretty evenly on both sides. The Pirates are a team that have kind of messed around with their order at times in terms of just who's going to hit at the top of the lineup. Like they hit Cervelli like third in the lineup last night, something like that. But they get to face Homer Bailey, who has just continued to be bad.
Yeah,
the guy just gives up home runs. I don't know what else to say about it.
It's almost like you name your son Homer, and then he becomes a pitcher. And
so close. Because he actually made the majors. Yeah, he actually ran just the life lottery, makes the majors, and now his name is synonymous with the thing that he allows the other team to do the most. So it's the height of irony, I guess. But yeah,
it's unlockers. But luckily for him, I mean, he did sign a $105 million contract. So, still hanging in there, I guess, that Homer Bailey. Yeah. Hopefully the guy lands on his feet after this and can figure out how to spend his 100 mil without thinking too much about the two home runs per nine he's allowed to
shoot. Guys like Josh Bell are coming very cheap. Josh Harrison still coming cheap because he started off in the very bottom of the barrel and when he came back from injury because of that FanDuel pricing mix-up. So he's still less than 3,000. Bell is only 3,300. A lot of good bats. And like I said, they are a team that will switch the order around. I don't mind the Cincinnati side of it as well, either with Votto. We're seeing some weird places. There are weird guys here with Votto and Goldschmidt just not putting up the numbers that we've become accustomed with them, and I don't know if some of it's age and some of it's luck, but Votto's still only 4,200 on FanDuel too. So a lot of ways to take it on the late slate of games, and like I said, that because so many offenses that are expensive are in good spots, it is going to make that starting pitching just that much more tricky, and that's something we'll wade through as the day goes on. You can go and get into the members-only chat like James mentioned before. That's part of the subscription at dfsr.com/MLB, and it'll give you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after, and you're all good to go. Buddy, talk to you again on Friday when we talk more baseball, but enjoy your evening of MLB action.
Later.